Blog Talk Radio.
You think they really ready for you now? You think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now?
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see?
The man you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing along. Lift every voice and sing, till it in heaven ring, ring with the harmony. Oh, let us sing, let our rejoice and rise high. South and Georgia.
The wine of the world we've Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our home ownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as $20 a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
Thank you. that's turn this down so I'm picking up too much feedback. Testing, testing. Turn my earphones down a little bit. Or now turn my volume up a little bit. Okay. Mic check. I don't got Ebony in today, but I got Gigi, number three, sitting in the seat. If you want to chat, she's in the chat room. I got the lovely, I think that's Dana from D.C. calling in, and I'm so glad she called in early, for real. You know, I don't know if I'm having my guest that I have scheduled call in. It was the individual that turned those boys that shot up that park that everybody been talking about on the news lately. And I'm trying to see if he's going to call in. He was scheduled to call in about now, but I'm going to give him some time. I suppose we have somebody in for the juvenile center to discuss that situation. And I'm also going to talk about racism in the military. And that's why I got Dana on. I hope she don't get upset that I brought her on for this. But somebody called in yesterday and was talking about the same thing that Dana was discussing about segregation in the military. So I figured she can be a great spokesperson for that. My girl Lynn was hot yesterday. Then Franco was running for Illinois House District 33. She's not part of the Martin Luther King Republicans. Not yet. But she's part of a Black Republican think tank that we're trying to form. Me and Brother Charles Love are trying to put together that. Matter of fact, let me bring my radio lady on and see what she has to say for a second. What's going on, Dana? How you doing?
Hey, Jimmy. How are you?
I'm fine. What I want to ask you, being in the military, someone called in yesterday and was discussing about segregation in the military. Before I get into that, let me just say the Jimmy Lee Radio Underground Network, heart and prayers go out to the Rush family. Even though suing his seat, we still go back. Robert Rush, Reverend Robert Rush. So while you going through the things that you're going through, ain't gonna bring up like Metro or anything like that. But I will be advancing my platform because I am seeking your seat. But I'm not going to be slamming you or dissing you. I might make mention the disparity. No, I'm not. I got another politician to jump on. So I'm going to give you a break. But before I do that, Bobby Rush, I do have a lady on the line that has a beef with you. They came to your office and tried to get assistance. And I don't know what happened, but I'll have her speaking for herself. Would you mind speaking on it now? You want to hold it back? It's on you. I got a couple more callers in.
First of all, I'm going to say that I'm not a spokesperson for anything. The only thing I can do is mention my experience, if that's what you mean.
That's what I meant.
And I'm not certain why. You're right. When I did reach out as a constituent to seek assistance from my congressional leader, none was given. In fact, not only did I reach out for assistance from my congressman, I also reached out for assistance from multiple senators. And regardless of how much I informed them of the illegal acts that were committed against me and how I was being targeted, bullied, tased, harassed, mistreated, and having criminal acts committed against me, there was nothing that was done. And it seemed to me that excuses were being used to kind of bow out of providing me assistance.
Give me an example.
Well, as a constituent, I have been told that I'm required to release my medical information to receive assistance. Why would my medical information have anything to do with constituent assistance? If the assistance can't be given because of the criminal acts committed against me, because of the federal law violations, the civil, equal opportunity, state law violations, then what is a medical record allowing someone to view private, personal, medical information going to help with? If you can't help uphold the law, then I'm sorry. As for me, for access to my private information, it's just an excuse to bow out because I'm not getting ready to be placed on in a circus ring after already being abused.
Okay. Okay. This is difficult. I know he's listening. Let me go here. What happened when we went to the congressman's office?
Well,
I'm in his office in D.C.,
so,
not on 79th, in D.C.
So I was assigned a person that was supposed to be that go-to person to help me with my case. And that person did nothing. I mean, I drove to his office and showed him evidence, sat down with him, showed him evidence. And despite having observed it for himself, he still did nothing. When my family reached out to tell them, hey, my daughter, sister, niece, cousin, aunt is in trouble, nothing was done. In fact, my mother stated that his office did, and I quote, nothing. He was of no help. So, having voted for almost 28 years, at a minimum, I thought that, you know, the person who I helped to vote in office could provide me assistance. But what I've learned is not true. And that's just not Congressman Rush's office. I can give you a list of 8 or 10 different senators and or congressmen named.
Well, go ahead and name them.
So my thing is this. Oh, you mean which offices did I reach out to?
Anything you want to name.
Okay, I've reached out to Senator Boxer, Congressman Rush, Senator Durbin, Senator, the Senator of Virginia, gosh, I don't know, I'll come up with some names, I'll tell you the names of the people who I've reached out to, Senator Lieberman, Senate Farm Services Committee. I'll give you some more names in just a moment. But regardless of who I reached out to, despite the dire situation that I was in, nothing was done. I mean, some letters were written. I got to give them that much. Some letters were written, and it seemed to put the people, give them a little bit of fear, but instead of making them change their ways, they just came harder. They responded with lies. And so what did I do? I showed them that they were telling a lie, and still nothing was done. Nothing was done. If you could allow people to make false statements, especially when these people were placed in office by Senate, the people that I wrote them about were elected into office by Senate. So when you go to the senator to tell them that the person that you have elected into office is committing criminal acts, it seems at minimum that they would hold them accountable for those criminal acts, but they don't.
You meant appointed, not elected.
Oh, I'm sorry, appointed. I take it back. You're right. I apologize. But they were appointed by Senate. And so if a person is appointed that is clearly violating the law to not do anything and leave them in that same position of authority, not only placed me at risk, but it also put me in a position to where I felt my life was in jeopardy.
Well, hold on. Hold on for a second, Lady D. I'm going to give you some time to gather all those names and all of that. What I'm going to do is I think I got some other callers and I'm going to bring them in. I think I got Miss Watkins in from Women Are Rising Ministry. Let me bring her in for a second. Hello, Miss Watkins. Is this you?
Yes, I'm here. Yes.
I know you was calling in to talk about the violence that is striking Chicago. This lady, Dana, she's from Chicago. She's in D.C. right now. Been there for a couple of years, military. But like I said, I'm not using this show to beat up on Bobby Rush. But, you know, full disclosure, I did suggest to Dana to go talk to Bobby Rush, not in malice, because I figured that seeing that she's in D.C., and it's not too often that constituents come to D.C., see you in office, that she might get some assistance. But we ain't got to beat that dead mule. I'm going to hold the mule for a second. But what I would like to discuss is a senseless shooting that's taking place in Chicago, Ms. Watkins. What's happening here?
Well, first of all, I believe that this is a spiritual movement. This is something that's taking place that God is, he's not allowing the shooting to take place, but he's trying to wake people up. We are in a spiritual warfare. Some of the things that are happening because of our disobedience, because of our, we're nonchalant, we're not concerned, because our men, and I'm not knocking all men down. Because there are some men that are doing some great things, but there are a lot of men that are doing nothing. And people are not standing up, and they are not taking their rightful places. And the reason why I say that is because we have a man, an activist, which is a pastor of another race, and he's out here for many, many years telling people to stop the violence. And the reason why I say that is because when my goddaughter was shot at...
My father's taking it right. talking about Father Flagert, right?
Excuse me?
You talking about Father Flagert, right?
Yeah, Father Flagert. Father Flagert. He's doing things that other...
No, I give him credit.
African
doing his thing.
Ministers and pastors should be doing, right. And the reason why I'm speaking about this is because I am a... my goddaughter was shot in cold blood on 59th. Well, let me say this also, too, callers. You know, I've done a lot of research. I have my own organization. I've been involved in so many things, politics since Hale Washington since the 80s, and community outreach for the last 30-some years, right here in Chicago, Illinois. And I've put a lot of people in office in Springfield, Washington, and Chicago politics. So I can speak on things because I've done all of these things. You know, not for pay, not for show, but because I thought that once we get these people elected or once I help them get elected, that they will do the right thing and they will really reach back into the communities and help our people. But unfortunately, our people are dying. They are spiritually walking dead. And as I mentioned, I am speaking about the violence because my goddaughter was slain in 2010. And I approached all of the elected officials that I knew that I had a rapport with, which is about 75% of them, and the ones that was in my community in the 20th ward at the time, and that's the Woodlawn area. And I was really shot down by the aldermen. People just act like they didn't care. And I was running for office against the aldermen at the time, and I was not able to get on the ballot because I was at the – they had Father Flagert had a memorial – for all other people whose children had been slain. And when we get to the memorial, I was going to go get on the ballot at City Hall, but something said, no, go to here with these people. If you're going to be in office, you're a community activist, lead organizer, you need to be at this memorial because these people are hurting. And everybody else was in the, it was the last day to get on the ballot, and everybody else was in the Board of Election getting on the ballot. And when we get over to Father Blake's church, There were no leaders or organizers or politicians there. And he was like, wow, this is really a surprise. Now, there was the 17th ward alderman, Natasha Thomas. She was there, but that's her ward. But no one was there to help, to greet with the slain parents. But I was able to be there because this was not my daughter. This was my goddaughter, but she was like my daughter. And I stayed there until it was over because I knew I had to get on the ballot so I can beat this man in office, beat him out of office, but I had to make my choice.
Who was the alderman?
What?
Who was the alderman?
Willie Cochran. Well, he's still the alderman, Willie Cochran. And
okay.
And so I knew that I had to make a choice. Are you going to go and be for the people, or are you going to do something else? And I decided to go there and do what I need to do because there were a lot of parents that are really hurting behind this. But my whole thing is this. I didn't get any support from my goddaughter, and I helped these people get elected, not Willie Cochran. I've never helped them get elected, not him. But I'm just saying I've helped some of the other state reps and senators and things, and I couldn't even get them to help with the funeral and things of that sort. But A.R. Leak, I did reach out to their family, Spencer, and they did, you know, do whatever they could have done. And Gerard McClendon, he was a great guy. He was talking about the, as I was in the alderman office, he came on his show speaking to people about the murders in Chicago. And he called me right back, Gerard McClendon. And I was just shocked because I had never really met Gerard until that day. And he called me back and said, Ms. Darver, I had got a call from you, and I'm so sorry about your loss, but let's talk about it. And so he did reach out to me, but as far as the violence, if you notice something, people, if you really watch everything, the violence are really only in three community in a serious way. In the Woodlawn area, Roseland area, and the Roseland, Woodlawn, and the Eaglewood area. Now, I know violence is all over the place. But I'm saying it seems to me that most of the violence is done in Inglewood, Woodlawn, and Roseland. And I have a list of everybody that has been slain or killed, murdered, shot, or whatever, in African-American people right here in the city of Chicago. And so what I'm saying, for what I've researched, the most of the shootings are in Woodlawn. I'm telling you guys, Woodlawn, Roseland, and Englewood. Now, why? I don't know why, but that's the community that the shooters are coming from. And so I'm looking at maybe the 16 ward. I'm looking at the 20 ward. Englewood is, I'm looking also at the 20 ward, the 16 ward, and Rose is the 9th ward. And I am so sorry if any elected officials offended, but I'm sorry, the 9th ward, the 16th ward, and the 20th ward, it encompasses those three communities. And what are we going to do about it? National Guard, guards, I doubt it. Shoot to kill, I doubt it. McCarthy stated that he didn't want nobody helping him do anything. He don't want anyone, the Cook County Sheriff, he don't want anyone coming in because he said he can do this. And I believe that he can. I agree with him because bringing in the National Guard, which is the military, this is not a war. This is not a military thing. Yeah, it is a spiritual war, yes. But this is not a physical war. And so we don't need those type of people coming in to dictate to the Chicagoans what it is and what we cannot do and all of the other things. We just need to get to the bottom of this, and we need to stand up as African-American people. We need to stop looking for our elected officials, our police, whomever to do, our pastors and ministers. We can't depend on these people. We have to depend on ourselves, and we have to get up, stand up, get up, and do what needs to be done, and that's what we are not doing as African-American people. I'm saying the older ones, the younger ones, and anybody else, we are not standing up to what we need to stand up for. And let me share this to everyone. When you are not standing up for what you need to stand up for, this will go to a level where people will begin to say that, well, we can do anything to people in Chicago. We can kill up all the people there, all the young kids, and nothing's going to happen. We're doing it. We've been doing it for the last 6-7 years. We can keep doing this because no one's going to do anything. No one is doing anything, and they're taking advantage of our babies, and that's genocide. You know, no matter who's killing them, we don't know who's killing these children. We don't know. We don't know where we think we. Some of us say we know, and maybe they do. I don't know. But all I know is that it has to stop, and someone has to bring peace. And I know God is the answer to everything, and we understand that. But if we are not even, some of us are not even living right for God to even answer our prayers. He said, if my people who are called by my name shall humble themselves, seek my face, turn from their wicked ways, and then pray, and then I will hear from heaven and heal the land. People are not doing that, so that's it. That's all I have to say.
Well, you said a lot. You said a lot. Before I bring somebody else, let me ask this question, Darva. You were saying that Willie Crocker didn't do anything for you.
Well, what he said to me was this. He said, what do you want me to do? I am not the one putting the guns in the people's hands that's shooting.
Yeah,
and I said,
and
well,
so,
I just said you're the alderman. I thought you can. I don't know what you do. If you used to be an ex-police officer, you should know what to do. If you was a sergeant, I don't know. I've never been in law enforcement, so I don't know. But that's what he said, and I walked out of his office with tears in my eyes, with like, I don't believe it. And so I spoke at the funeral, and I let the young people know. And that's when I started the organization Just Up. For the people, by the people, of the people, because we need justice for Just Us, and justice has not been served.
Well, and the other thing, at a minimum, leaders should be expected to lead. If you're not going to be a leader, then why are you there? You understand? We don't need somebody that's just taking up space. We need someone.
Well,
that
we
can
know
get,
that.
You know,
Well, I have a problem with our leaders, because this is what I tell people. How can people that was leading our mothers and fathers still be in leadership roles? Now, that ain't making no sense. Something ain't right. Either we crazy or something that's not right. How can leaders, when you lead, you lead, you do your part, you move and let the other people come on behind you, and you bring them up, you train them, and then you pass the baton. people are not passing the baton in Chicago, Illinois. The leaders that led our parents are still leading us today. To me, that doesn't make sense.
It would be okay if the person was progressive and was continuing, you know, their legacy with the changing times. But that's not what's happening. That's not what's happening. No one is seeing what's important and discussing the things that matter. I mean, it may be on the table. You know, it may be a part of a conversation. But we need some action. Because if you just look and just look around, things are getting worse.
Right, I agree with you. Let me bring this call in from 847 right here. It's 847-727. What's going on, caller? I ain't got my little assistant in here, so I can't take your name. How you doing? Who is this now?
Hey, my name is, you can just call me Mr. Little. That's what most people know me as.
Okay, Mr. Little, what's going on?
Hey, I'm just a gentleman. First of all, Then somebody introduced me to your blog radio show tonight for the first time.
Okay.
I don't have a whole lot of background information on actually who you are in terms of, I heard that you were Miss Dorothy Tillman's son. Is that correct?
True that.
So I take it you've been living in the city of Chicago all your life?
All my life.
Could you give me your proximity and age?
I'm in Park Manor, grew up in Grand Boulevard, a.k.a. Bronzeville, went to Modest and High Park, Central State. They help you out a little bit.
Right, and then what age range are you in?
Hip-hop, house music, hip-hop, house music.
Okay, that's
fine. 87-95.
Okay, that's fine. The reason why I'm saying that is because all that is relevant to what I'm about to say. I heard Ms. Watkins talking about the violence in the city of Chicago and that we at the bottom need to step up and quit looking towards these leaders like the young lady just said that aren't progressive. They're not changing with the times. They're not problem solvers. They just speak to the issue when it arises. They kind of feel that black people are very emotional. And so once their emotions die down, everything goes back to business as usual until the next child dies. And that's the sad reality in our community. So we at the bottom who are in the trenches of this situation have to deal with it. I'm a gentleman who actually work at the Juvenile Detention Center, also known as the Audie Home.
Nashby Jefferson.
I'm familiar.
Which one?
Nashby Jefferson is the school inside of the facility.
Well, I'm familiar with where you at, but let me drop a little spot on you while we know so we can continue the analogy. I am a Republican though, you know what I'm saying? I'm Republican. I'm letting you know that now. I've got a group called the Martin Luther King Republicans. And we're strictly on some black issues. So I'm going to just throw that to you. Now, you say you're from juvenile home. I'm familiar with that little area. I'm familiar with the little school in there and the little situation. So I want you to go on ahead and rock what you got to rock. I think it might be prevalent in what's going on right now. So I just want to just throw that to you because there might be some prevalent information that you're gathering right now. Go ahead, homie.
Okay. I've actually been working at the facility for 25 years. I've been there under every last superintendent that has ever worked in the institution. The institution was actually built in 1973.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the current name of the facility is called the Cook County Juvenile Detention Center. But it was better known as the Audie Home back in your day. And so what's at the systemic root of all of this killing is the Cook County Juvenile Detention Center, a place that nobody in the mass media ever talks about as it connects to the streets and the violence that is happening. The sad reality is it's our children who are killing each other and us. And one of the sad realities is the institution is actually victimizing young people who have already been victimized, meaning they've been neglected, abused, mistreated. And as a result, when young children are neglected, abused, mistreated, and they're hurting, they hurt other people. And that's when they start to get out of control. And so the Juvenile Detention Center's job under the organizational chart of Cook County is to keep the community safe. That's what his intent is, to keep the community safe. Example, if a person victimized, if a child victimizes someone on the street and the police pick him up, and it's, let's say it's a murder, attempt murder, armed robbery, a sexual assault, the last place that young person should be is still in the community. So they would come to the Juvenile Detention Center until they get adjudicated, meaning they go through their trial. In juvenile court, it's called adjudication. So once they go through their trial, then they get convicted or whatever. Now, in times past, if a person had a gun, they would sit at the juvenile detention center until they got adjudicated. Now they come in and they go back home the very next day. So you get a young person who has victimized somebody, and they come to the juvenile detention center, and they let them go home the next day. The code on the street is they're going to try to get back. So then that person gets killed, and people around them get killed, when the juvenile detention center's purpose was to keep the community safe. We currently got 350 young people on our streets on electronic monitoring devices, and more than half of them for gun cases. All of the murders, the predominance of the murders that I'm seeing on the street that are happening by young people, are happening by young people who I've walked through the halls with at the juvenile detention center more than once. The last recent killings that you see of the 13 people who got shot, they mentioned a couple of the young men's names. Now, they're not teenagers anymore, but those same young men have been in the juvenile detention center more than once. Ms. Watkins said that most of the killings are happening in Roseland, Englewood, and Woodlawn. Well, it's not just killings that are happening. There are major armed robberies happening in every major community in Chicago and the outlying suburban areas. Bronzeville area is a place where children are being stuck up and doing a lot of armed robberies. North Lawndale, which is on the west side, there's a lot of armed robberies and murders that are happening in that area as well. What's taking place is the Juvenile Detention Center was taken over all the way back in 1999 through a bogus lawsuit. And the individuals who filed the lawsuit then stripped all of the discipline and accountability for the youth with the intention for the youth to become more and more violent. Because when they stripped the discipline, the levels of violence increased in the facility. I used to wonder, why is they doing this? Why are they stripping the accountability for the youth? And it just came very obvious and evidently clear for me. This year, I'm noticing that a vast amount of the young people that are in the facility are walking back out into the community with psychotropic drugs in their hands. And then I came to find out that the attorney who filed the lawsuit is actually on the advisory board for the mental health organization that is currently running the facility. A lot of the murders that I'm seeing are young people with psychotropic drugs in them. People don't realize that psychotropic drugs have side effects. The side effect is suicidal ideation, delusions. They become, later on, they could become schizophrenic off of the drugs. And they're also very, very addictive. One of my pharmacist colleagues explain these drugs to me. And one of the things she said to me was, drugs are categorized 1 through 4. 1 being the least addictive, 4 being the most addictive. Heroin and crack cocaine are level 4 drugs. And then psychotropic medications like Abilify, Seroquel, Depakote, all of these, Zoloft, Prozac, Ritalin, all of these drugs are level 3 drugs. I'm noticing that every child that walks out of the facility with DCFS, under DCFS care or the Department of Human Services care, meaning they do not have a guardian to guard over them, every last one of them are walking out of the facility with psychotropic drugs in their hands. And some of them are walking out with 2 and 3 different types of drugs. I'm going to close with this. I can go over a litany of cases of the youth that have just walked out of the facility. But just one or two high profile, but I can just go over one after another. The young lady, Adele Pendleton, who got killed, that everybody knows. That young lady was killed allegedly right now. Allegedly killed by a gentleman named Michael Ward, who was 18. Michael Ward had been in the juvenile detention center before. When we think about Darian Albert, the young man who got hit upside the head with the plank and got killed out there by Finger High School, the young man who killed him had just gotten out of the juvenile detention center 3 months before that happened. That young man had been arrested 27 times. I'm saying to you, the individuals who infiltrated the Cook County Juvenile Detention Center and are currently running the facility, first in charge is making $325,000 a year. The second in charge is making $200,000 a year. And these people are systematically tearing the facility apart on the inside. The general public has no clue that this is happening. A lot of your politicians are either complicit in it or they are afraid because they don't want their skeletons brought out, and these people will put their names in the news print if they say anything. Similar to what you saw with Jesse Jackson Jr., similar to what you saw with William Beavers, because Mr. Beavers is actually a man who was challenging the gentleman who's running the facility named Earl Dunlap. And so now Beaver's name found itself in the papers. And so our politicians don't have the integrity to deal with this issue because these individuals will put their names in print and just destroy their entire reputation. So I want to thank you for allowing me to speak on your blog. And also wanted to say, I'm starting a blog of my own with the help of my colleagues. It's called The Untold Story. Just to stop the violence, The Untold Story, the Cook County Juvenile Detention Center, which will be content heavy with all of this pertinent information that I just told you. And it should be up and running by October the 15th. For your listening audience who may be interested in understanding this more specifically, you will be able to email the blog based upon The Untold Story, the number 4, the letter U, at yahoo.com. That will be its address. On the 15th of October, we have a court hearing that's coming up at the Dirksen Federal Building, where this gentleman, Earl Dunlap, has to come for a status hearing. He started working there in 2007, and he's still currently there. And his gross mismanagement of the institution is the reason why we have this epidemic of killing on our streets. I want to thank you for your hearing, sir.
Hear me.
Yes.
I'd like to thank him for for speaking out because what he said was extremely interesting. But I would like to comment on some of the things he said regarding meditation. You know, it's already evident that you can't solve a problem with a pill, okay? But in a large number of cases, medication is needed. So I don't want anyone to think that there isn't a place for those medicines that he mentioned. The reason I say that is because there are a large number of people that are mentally ill and that rely on this medicine to control them and to contain their symptoms. And so so I would not want anyone to have the misperception that those medications aren't needed. I would like to say, though, that sometimes when a person tries to solve a pill with a problem with a pill, you've got to get to the root and the cause, and see what is the real issue. And once that is addressed, then you can start to have some kind of a resolution. But until then, it just continues to just make a mountain out of a mold.
Ma'am, can I speak to what you said about the psychotropic drugs?
Absolutely.
First of all, if you have a pen or a piece of paper available, I have a required reading that I would like, a recommended reading that I would like for you to read. You sound like you're very articulate. It sounds like you're an avid reader to me. And there's a recommended reading that I would like for you to read.
Okay.
It's called Anatomy of an Epidemic. Anatomy of an Epidemic. And it's written by Robert Whittaker, W-H-I-T-A-K-E-R. Robert Whittaker. I recommend that you could either purchase that book or you can go to the library. It's in the library and read that particular book. It is the entire history of psychiatry, where it evolved from, and then it talks about all of your psychotropic medications and what it creates in the mind. The other thing I would like to say when it comes to the psychotropic medications, first of all, if a person uses psychotropic meds, the question would be, you're asking someone like a child whose brain is still growing and developing and forming, and a child's brain don't fully form until they're 25 years of age. You're asking someone to diagnose them with a mental illness, prescribe drugs, but their brain is still trying to form. Secondly, the psychotropic medications, you cannot find in any medical journal anywhere, where psychotropic medications has cured anyone. And thirdly, you said it's so it can bring them under control.
Well, okay, first of all, I would like to let you know that I am a medical professional, okay? And I know for a fact that some of those medicines, like we're using Zoloft that you mentioned, for example, it helps to stabilize the serotonin levels in the brain. Okay, some of these things work on the dopamine levels of the brain, and there are known associations with some mental symptoms and depleted levels in the brain. Now, I'm not saying that these medications can cure. And oftentimes we can't find a cure for things. I have chronic back pain. I use Tylenol and Motrin on a daily basis. Will my back pain be cured? Absolutely not. But if I can make it better, then please give me a Motrin. You understand? So when you talk about things like schizophrenia, bipolarism, manic depression, anxiety. When you're looking at things like those, and if there is something that can help a person have a better quality of life and maybe prevent them from harming or preventing from harming themselves, then those medications are needed. Now, you're right. They may never cure the person because there are other factors that come into play. Things like counseling, things like addressing the root cause. And unless those things are done, then it's like putting a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound. You have to get to the root cause of what the real problem is. When you look at these young men that are in the juvenile system, these people are sometimes fending for themselves. They are placed as juveniles in adult situations that they can't handle, can't address, and don't know what to do about it. And so until we can find role models, mentors, leaders, people that can be examples for our youth and especially our young men, then we're not improving the situation. When I was growing up, if there was a saying that it took a village to raise a child, well, now the village doesn't care. In fact, often they're turning their back on the children or afraid of them. No one should be afraid of a teenager. That teenager needs direction. They need someone to show them the way. And they don't have that right now. Our leaders can't be trusted in some instances. And when the police are corrupt, when the elected officials are corrupt, when the teachers are corrupt, when the attorneys are corrupt, then who can they look to say, be a good person, do the right thing?
The question I have for you, are you corrupt?
I am definitely not corrupt. And I'd like to make a difference in this world.
And guess what?
But let me tell you this.
Okay.
Because I want to make a difference, because I believe in the greater good, I have been punished. When I speak out against things that have been wrong, I've been faced with retribution, reprisal, retaliation, and in some instances, threats.
Mm-hmm.
Threats to my family. You see? And these are by people that are supposed to be leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So again, when the leaders are corrupt, when you've got corruption at the top of the bottom, has no, they don't stand a chance.
Excuse me.
Yes?
Sir, I don't mean to interrupt you, but sir, you act, that was something deep you said. Officials there that you talked about, they need to be investigated. Like you said, I guess politicians won't investigate it, but pertaining to those psychotropic drugs, I hear what you're saying. I had those drugs before, and they mess you up. I tried just for a little bit. You know, those are mind altering. You know what I'm saying? And if you don't, and if it alters your mind, what will happen if you stop taking it? It's going to cause convulsions. It's going to cause all types of things bad happen to you. Those medicines are going to need to be taken off the shelf. For real.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't need to be putting them in kids' hands, putting them out in the public.
The problem
I know what he's talking about. You haven't taken the medicine. I took the medicine. I know what he's talking about.
What I'm saying is, and I don't disagree with anything that you said. What I'm saying is that at some point we've got to stop trying to solve a problem with the pill. When you take a child that may be a little bit overactive and then hurry up and throw them some Ritalin and not taking into consideration that Ritalin can cause worse depression.
But he's saying this is like a conspiracy. You don't understand what you miss what his man's saying. This man's saying it's like a conspiracy there. Am I saying that right, bro?
You got it exactly right. I want to say to my sister, I asked her if she had the integrity, because I do, and she said that she does. And all I'm saying to her is, I would like for her to meet up with me. And the reason why I say that is, I walk around the juvenile detention center every Tuesday. Every Tuesday, rain or shine. I walk around there with my sign. I have my Stop the Violence t-shirt on and my black and white jogging pants on. And I walk around with a sign with a head with nothing but pills on it that says the juvenile detention center is out of control. I still currently work at the facility. Mm-hmm. And so if you have the integrity and I have the integrity, mm-hmm. I'm inviting you to meet me at the juvenile detention center on any Tuesday that you can make it, from 2 to 5 o'clock, mm-hmm. and discuss this issue with me and become a voice with me. I'll present to you all the pertinent information. Okay?
You know what? I'm not willing to take you up on that because I think that these things are so important because I know that it's not just about me. I've got children that I want to grow up in a society that has morals, and not just that, I don't want them to have to worry and wonder and be concerned for their lives just because they're walking down the street.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, what he's saying, this conspiracy is going to keep that from happening. Am I correct?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
This is conspiracy. That dream is not going to happen. This is what he's saying. Well, they are permanently damaging these boys' brains.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Have you all ever read the book?
They're turning them into junkies, violent junkies.
Right. Right. Have you all ever heard of the book by Michelle Alexander? She wrote a book that's called, I can't remember the name right off the hand, but it talks about the prison system and how marijuana and drug sales has increased our prison population from 350,000 to over 2.5 million since Ronald Reagan came into office. And the reason why I say that is her book is talking about illegal drugs on the street. Her book is behind the times because what I'm trying to say to you all now, the pharmaceutical industry is in the business of legalized drug sales, and they're targeting our children inside of the juvenile detention center because the general public has no clue what's happening behind those walls because juvenile crime is confidential. Juvenile crime is confidential. So they're able to get away with it because my colleagues on the inside have seen this taking place before their very eyes, but a lot of them are afraid to lose their occupation. And so as a result, they keep their mouths closed about this. I've been all on the radio talking about this when they will let me get some air time. But the thing is, they control the media outlet. So it's going to be things like your blog, Mr. Tillman, and my blog and social media that I'm going to try to get this message out to the community and make that place become the directed focus and the root of all the killings that we see on our streets.
Damn. That's happening everywhere then, bro. That's happening everywhere. That's happening everywhere. I mean, I'm glad you brought this out, man, because we're wondering where all these kids are coming from. I was a teacher, man, and to see those boys, you know, they come in class, they all on the Ritalin and all that, and they ain't got their drugs, they crazy. They on the
exactly. Because what's happening is you're asking, first of all, a child who oftentimes even have parents or maybe no parents or partial parents or maybe homeless. You're asking a child that is irresponsible to be responsible to take some medicine on a consistent basis.
Secondly, which is sedating. Yeah, go ahead.
Secondly, this same child typically is out there smoking dro and everything else along with these psychotropic drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Thirdly, this same child, what we tend to not realize is that when you start taking these drugs, in the short term, they seem like they're working because they actually sedate you. They're mood-altering drugs. They alter your mood. In the long term, in the long term, they become addictive. And when you stop taking them, when you stop taking them, your body goes into withdrawal symptoms, and everybody thinks it's because you're not taking your medicine. But it's because your body going into withdrawal because you were addicted to it. It's similar to a person who uses heroin. If you ever remember that movie, Ray Charles movie, Ray, when Ray was taking that heroin and he stopped taking it, he got dope sick. So the question is, was he sick already, or was it the dope making him sick? Well, the same thing happens with psychotropic medication. When you stop trying to take it, it makes you sick. And here's my third thing that I want to make sure I make this point perfectly clear. When a person has what they call bipolar, ADHD, anxiety disorder, and all of these other different disorders, if you're trying to bring them under control with psychotropic medications, the question then becomes, what is the side effect of the psychotropic medication? Suicidal thoughts, hallucination ideations, kinesia, which is violent tendency. So then the question you have to ask yourself, what is the trade-off for trying to get their attention together? The trade-off is they may become suicidal. The trade-off is they may become violent. The trade-off may be they become hallucinogenic. I don't know if y'all remember in May, in Chicago, in the North Lawndale community, on May the 6th, it was in the newspaper, there was a young boy in North Lawndale at 4 o'clock in the afternoon who was driving down the, who was riding his bicycle down the street, randomly shooting at people on Independence on the west side at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. He did not have a hoodie on. He wasn't trying to hide. He wasn't trying to duck, dodge, nothing. People called the police. The police showed up. He turned around. He didn't try to run from the police. He turned around and just started shooting at the police, and they killed him. That young man had just gotten out of the juvenile detention center in April, a month prior to that. He had went to DOC in February. They sent him to DOC for 2 months, and he came back. They released him. But in September of last year, he was diagnosed in the juvenile detention center with bipolar disorder, and they start prescribing him, prescribed and start giving him Prozac.
Damn.
Now, prior to that, he had been in the detention center 4 other times. And he had never been violent. He had never been out of control while he was there with us. Matter of fact, I even spoke to the librarian in Nancy B. Jefferson Alternative School, and it blew her away. She said, that kid was never like that in my library. He actually sat there and studied. And I'm saying to you, he was hallucinating when he was out there shooting people like that. Because that's not normal. Now watch this. Watch this. Y'all remember Columbine? You remember the Colorado mass killing in the theater? You remember Newtown, Connecticut, where all them kids got killed? You remember Virginia Tech? And recently, you remember Washington, D.C. in the Navy shipyard? Every last one of those individuals were on psychotropic medication. It is truly medical malpractice. See, the President of the United States and them are barking up the wrong tree. They're talking about gun control. Gun control. You're a Republican. This might be up your alley. They talk about gun control. Gun control. But the question I submit to you, if you got a baby or a child in your house and they learn how to walk and they start touching stuff, do you move everything in the house so that they don't touch it, or do you try to teach them, don't touch it because you're not supposed to? The question is, we've had guns, we're going to have guns. That's not the question. The question is, how are you holding people accountable when they use those guns? It's the people who are using the gun, and I don't even own a gun, but it's the people who are using the gun that need to be held accountable. And what's taking place is these people who are therapists in the psychiatric industry, they are prescribing these drugs to these people who are sending them into hallucination type of thoughts, and they're killing people because of the medications that they're giving them. And people are not looking at that concept. They're looking at the guns, but they ain't looking at the fact that all of those individuals, they had a common link. The common link was they were all using psychotropic medications. And a vast amount of the children and young people that you see walking your streets are using psychotropic medications. I encourage you, young lady, to read that book that I gave you. I mean,
I agree with you that some of the side effects of the medication are those that you have mentioned. But I also know for a fact that there are millions of people that are taking those same medications, and they're not doing those things. So, again, you can't solve a problem with a pill. You know what I mean? No one says to an alcoholic, here,
let them stop taking that medication.
Take this antabuse, and then now you're no longer an alcoholic. No, absolutely not. People that are healed or in remission from alcoholism, they are in that remission because of the steps and the counseling that also goes hand in hand with any treatment that you receive. So you cannot expect, because I know that those medicines have a place in this world. Now, are some people prescribing too many? Absolutely, 100%. Are some people irresponsible in what they've been charged and allowed to do in terms of prescribing medication? Absolutely. I'm not saying
have you taken any of those medications?
Have I taken any of them?
Yeah, I mean, have you taken any of this medication? Because you're speaking like you got a lot of book knowledge, but no first-hand experience. I've taken this medication. I know what he's talking about. Go ahead, take some for a while. Take some psychotropic drugs for a while, and then stop taking them. See what happens. You'll start twitching.
Just like with high blood pressure, just like with diabetes, there is no medication that's a magic pill. You've got to find the right thing for the right person, right? And you've also got to ensure that whatever the reason that it is needed. You've got millions of people that are schizophrenic that need medication. And guess what? This medicine helps them. You've got
this medicine. Listen, this medicine is a synthetic. It's a synthetic, meaning it's original. There's a natural. There is something natural because this medicine is a synthetic. It's a synthetic. That means it's an imitation of something real. You just give that person a real thing, and they'll be okay.
There are all kinds of things that are being used.
Right, St. George's wort is good for like depression and everything, but yet they'll give them some medication that will addict a person. You stop taking it, you're going to have physical problems.
And it's not necessarily addictive.
What you
it's
mean?
It's not necessarily addictive.
What do you mean? You have good knowledge.
Not,
you have no experience.
Addictive.
Take the medication and find out.
It's not addictive.
What do you think the side effects are from?
A medication that is considered addictive means that a person will have withdrawal symptoms once they stop using it. These medications that you're referring to are stabilizing the serotonin and the dopamine levels in the brain. So without the medication, you've got unstable serotonin and dopamine levels. Now,
After a while, they increase the milligrams of the medication. After a while, your body stabilizes with that medication, so they have to increase the dosage.
Let's not forget that I am in the medical profession.
I'm sorry. Very important is just dealing with people dying
now,
here.
I'm not making excuses.
Young lady?
Yes. And I'm not Can you hear me?
Young lady.
And I'm not saying you're wrong in your statement. I'm saying
can I ask you a question?
But we can't make a blanket statement about any medication. And think
can I ask you a question?
Okay, absolutely, 100%. Go ahead.
I want to. You said you're in the medical field. What is it that you actually do?
I assess, diagnose, and I prescribe medication. I diagnose them with illnesses, and I prescribe them medication.
You said you diagnose mental illnesses?
Diagnose illnesses, whether that be high blood pressure, depression.
So you,
anxiety.
Physical. She, no, she doesn't.
So
you're not mental.
She's
not mental.
If someone has mental illness,
right.
I'm not
okay.
just going to throw a pill at them and
okay.
and think I can't give them the other things, the other components, and the other aspects of their care that are necessary.
And,
so if a person is mentally ill, what do? I refer them to the mental specialist.
Can I say this to you, ma'am?
Yes.
As a medical doctor yourself who prescribes medical drugs for physical ailments, when you're prescribing those drugs, you oftentimes tell your patients what the side effects are, correct?
I tell them what the side effects are, and I closely follow them to ensure
okay.
that they are being assisted by the medication.
Okay. And oftentimes the side effects of the drugs that you're prescribing are physical side effects, correct?
Have you ever looked at the side effect of a Tylenol or a Motrin?
Yeah, what's
and
right.
Everything has a side effect. Everything has a side effect.
Right,
everything
and I'm saying.
Has a
side effect. So, right, I understand
what we look at in the medical profession is benefit versus risk. If
right.
the benefit of the medication outweighs the risk of prescribing
that's my point.
We prescribe it.
That's my point. And I'm saying in the medical profession that you're in, the drugs that you prescribe have physical side effects, correct?
There is a potential. It doesn't mean it has.
Right. There's a potential for a physical side effect, correct?
Absolutely, with every medication.
Okay. I'm asking you this question. It's not a trick question. I'm not trying to trick you.
No, go ahead. It's okay.
Okay. What I'm trying to say is, in the psychiatric industry, the side effects of their particular drugs that they prescribe has a mental side effect.
Bingo.
That makes them become suicidal, that makes them hallucinate. And matter of fact, the premise of that book that I'm asking you to read that talks about the serotonin and dopamine, they're called reuptake inhibitors in their brain that deals
those
with...
SSRI, serotonin, right.
Exactly. That deal with the frontal lobe of their mind. That it's the premise of that book is that it literally creates a frontal lobotomy. That it's actually damaging their brains, and it literally, the drugs actually create schizophrenia. They
right.
don't already
Bingo.
Have it. The drugs actually creates it. And over the long
yes.
term, longitudinal, this man has did a longitudinal study. Over the long term, it decalcifies the brain. And as a result, they become schizophrenic. And one of my greatest fears when I see these boys, you mentioned mentoring the kids. And I'm saying to you, man, when I first started working there in 1989, we didn't even wear uniforms. 87% of the young men were African American boys, ranging in age from 10 to 17. The predominance of the gentlemen who were working there were African American males. We know that most African-American boys, 75% of them don't even have fathers at home. So when they used to come to the juvenile detention center back then, we had 700 children. And if you had 10 in the whole building on psychotropic drugs, that was a high number. And all of them were being prescribed by their primary physicians. Now they have decreased the population so rapidly that now we have 260 youth. And out of the 260 youth, at least 90 of them are taking psychotropic medication. Not only that, the place is more violent than it has ever been in its history. Matter of fact, we had a boy who died in association to the Juvenile Detention Center a year and a half ago. That was the first time in its history that that happened. The other part of this equation is, now what has happened is this man has infiltrated the facility so bad, and I love my sister, okay? But now, instead of it being 90% African-American males who are working with the boys, now it's 80% African-American females. They literally get a boy showers and everything. So what happened is the institution had a communal effect. It had its humanity. These young boys was looking up to us. And if you pay attention to the history of Chicago, in the 90s, juvenile crime was at an all-time low. And it was at an all-time low because the juvenile detention center was running at maximum premium level. We were doing conferences all over the United States.
Were these drugs being issued like that back then?
Huh?
Was the drugs being issued back then in the 90s?
That's my point.
Or they just recently started coming in? Because I'm trying to figure out, because this happening all over, and I'm trying to figure out, did the crime rate rise because this psychotropic medicine started being put out here?
Yes, sir. I'm saying to you, these same people who took over the Juvenile Detention Center, they literally been doing this all over the United States of America.
Yeah, I was in the schools, man. I see. I know what you're talking about, man.
And I'm not saying it's wrong. Of course, anytime you've got 50% of people who are almost, what is that, like you said, it's 90 out of 260, so that's what, almost 30%?
Yes.
In one area, in one place, that are mentally ill, and they're not in mental institutions, then there's probably something wrong with that system.
And what I'm saying to you,
statistically, you're not going to have a third of people in one area that have the same problem.
And what I'm saying to you, what I'm saying to you is this. First of all, the juvenile detention center is not a hospital. Let's first clear that up. It's
right.
Not
right,
a hospital.
Exactly. I agree with you 100%.
And they're literally, the average length of stay for a child in the facility is 17 days. That's the average length of stay. They're literally diagnosing a lot of our children and prescribing them the drugs in there.
And you know, I'm in psychology, bro, and they taught us this. They said, you know, black kids, as compared to white kids are more docile than black kids. Black kids are just naturally energetic. But and you prescribe drugs based upon the docility of them white kids. Say for instance, if that kid is passive, then you don't give him that drug. But a black kid might not be passive. He just got a lot of energy. So they're prescribing black kids these drugs that's just natural energy. And they're getting them addicted. And I understand what you mean. Because they're labeling all these kids in the school with that. They come to school, all of them on Ritalin. And when they don't take their medicine, they become, they go through withdrawal. And they go through withdrawal, they're off to lunch, man. And you know, when they get older, they're gonna be terrible. They're gonna be terrible out here, man.
Exactly.
I mean, this is deep, man. This is deep.
Let me say this to you. I'm an African-American male. I am 51 years of age. I was born in the city of Chicago on the west side. At the age of 7, I moved to the south side. My best friend was my father. My best friend died when I was 9. I came home from grammar school and went up to my grandmother's house who lived next door to me, and they told me that my best friend had died. I ran out of the house. I lived 6752 South Lafayette.
And I ran from 67th Street to 95th Street with tears in my eyes. I didn't realize it at the time that I would be running for a lot of years after that. That was traumatic for me. At the age of 10, I started drinking 151 Bacardi rum, smoking weed, sticking up, all that. Those young kids are me. That's why I'm doing this. I'm advocating for them. When I got to the seventh grade, they put me in an EMH classroom, emotionally, mentally handicapped, self-contained. By the time I was in eighth grade, I failed the eighth grade. I had to automatically graduate at 15, and I went to Paul Robeson the first year and became Paul Robeson. By the time I was 16, there was nothing my mother could do with me, nobody could do with me, because I didn't care if I live or die. Why? Because my best friend was gone. Young lady, when you said you got to get to the root, that's the root. You're exactly right. God forbid, had I lived in this era of time, I would have been doped up by legalized drug sales because everybody would have thought I was crazy. But I almost died of a drug overdose. And it's at that time, I bargained with God, if you let me live, I'm going to turn my life around. Well, he honored his promise. I honored mine. I start teaching myself how to read. That's why I can articulate. I have never graduated from college, but I can articulate and verb it and give verbal commentary to whatever it is because I'm an avid reader. I read just for pleasure. I don't look for a standing. I love children. That's what I do. I will die for these children. So I'm saying to you, miss, that's why I made that statement to you. Do you have integrity? Because I sure do.
And I'm asking you that.
I just want to say this. If you have integrity, I sure do. And I am hoping, and I prayed on this, to start a movement from the ground. Not from the top, from the ground. With people with integrity, like yourself. That is the reason why I gave you that invitation. Because politics changed by the people. For the people, by the people, of the people. Nothing has ever changed without the people. As Martin, as Malcolm, as Booker T, as Frederick Douglass, as Sojourner Truth, as Harriet Tubman. Nothing has ever changed. Matter of fact, the White House became named the White House because of the people. Because white people, the president was trying to appease white people, so they changed it from the executive house to the White House because the president, the white people got angry because they let the president let Booker T. Washington into the White House. And so the president wanted to show allegiance to the white people, so he changed the name of the White House, the executive house, to the White House. So nothing ever changes without the people. So that's why my invitation is to you. I heard your concerns about how the politicians are doing you, that they didn't give you the support you were looking for. And I'm saying to you, man, our children are dying every day. And these are the same children that I walk through the halls with every day. I've been to 75 funerals in the last 6 years of children that I walk through the halls with. If I'm not careful, I might have to be on psychotropic medication because I didn't went into depression.
That's the reason why I made a
conscious decision. Either go deeper into depression or become actively engaged in coming to resolution to the problem. So I have decided to become actively engaged. That's why somebody gave me your number tonight, sir. Because they know how actively engaged I am.
Okay? And I'm going to tell you this. The next time I'm in Chicago on the Tuesday, I'm going to get your information. And I'm going to take you up on that offer. I would like to commend you for being a person that will stand up for what's right in this world. Because I truly believe to my heart that if we don't stand up and contribute, stand up and fight for making this world a better place, then we're contributing to the demise of it. Okay? And that's the reason why when I saw a wrong, I stood up for that wrong, and I will go to my grave fighting for what is right. I can't stand by or sit by and watch somebody do something that is not right for our society. And the reason is because I got children that have got to grow up here. And if I support discrimination, if I allow segregation, if I close my eyes to killing, if I turn my back on corruption, then guess what? You're going to pay the price. And I don't want my son to have to worry for the rest of their lives that just because they are young black men born in this United States of America that they are at risk. And the truth of the matter is, and the fact of the matter is, they are. The reason why I was given so much trouble is because I said, as a black woman, I should not have to be forced to work in a segregated workspace and then be abused for something I can't take off. I cannot unmask my African-American history. I can't take off my culture. I can't change my skin color. And I wouldn't if I could.
Bro, I want to comment, man. I have some depression medicine, man. And, you know, I was just feeling a little down, right?
Uh-huh.
I was feeling a little down, right? But so I started reading the side effects, right? And it said if I stop taking this medicine, I'm gonna have thoughts of committing suicide. Now I'm just feeling a little down. But if I stop taking this medicine, I'm going to really feel down about killing myself.
What type
of medicine is this? Now, I know for a fact if you walk into this mental health office, they're going to diagnose you with something, or else they have no business because they don't perform mental surgery. They don't perform surgery, so they have to have a business. They have to keep you coming back, so they're going to diagnose you with something. You walk through that door, you're going to get diagnosed. You're going to get assigned a pill because it keeps that area in the hospital busy. Because
yes,
they don't
indeed.
Perform surgery, so they have no other reason there but to have people coming back to them. So the medicine, is addictive. So all of the medication is addictive, and they know that.
Yes.
Or if it wasn't, they wouldn't assign it to you.
Right.
They increase the medication after a while to make sure that it is in your system and mind altering. Because once it alters your mind, can I speak from experience? Once you're off of this medication, your mind becomes altered. It can cause what they call tardive dyskinesia, where you have uncontrollable muscle spasms and twitching of the body anywhere, all types of day. I've seen people come off that stop taking their medication for a week. I mean, major muscle spasms. When you see people walking down the street, they be twitching and all this. I'm speaking from experience. When you see people walking down the street and they're twitching, you think, oh, that person's crazy. No, that person just probably stopped taking the medicine for a while, and now they're taking their medicine back. But the medicine has caused a permanent injury where they have permanent twitching. Even though they start taking the medicine back, they will start having – it's a permanent injury to their brain. It's a mental mind, and that's terrible, man, because it can cause all types of seizures, muscle spasms, anything that deals with your even anything to deal with, I think that's involuntary, the muscles that work, the organs that you can't control physically. It deals with your mental, and when you alter someone's mind, now you're altering their internal organs because that mind controls them. That's why you see all the twitching and all that coming from. Stop taking your medication and see what happens. That's why you said I noticed you differentiate between the physical and the mental. It's two different aspects in the hospital. I know you deal with the physical, ma'am, but he's talking mental. This is something else. When you walk through that mental, you're going to get diagnosed whether you like it or not.
Were you ever offered counseling?
Huh?
Everything can't be cured in a 5-pill.
Right. But,
the whole goal
to keep them in business or keep someone in a title is give them that pill.
The goal is supposed to be to improve the quality of life of the person.
The benefit of me stop taking this medicine is now I'm thinking about killing myself. When I wasn't thinking about killing myself, now I am.
Come on now. That's a benefit. What I'm saying to you is, you're supposed to.
You're good at memorizing. You're good at memorizing things they want you to memorize without thinking, and it's evident.
No, I know. You're supposed to take anyone that prescribes you a medication for any reason. If a person takes too much Motrin, they can have kidney failure.
We're talking about mental here. We're talking
example,
about the brain.
What I'm saying to you
we're
is,
not talking about the physical body. We're talking
physical,
about the brain.
Those are physical manifestations that can occur from taking a medication, and that's not a psychotropic medication. Tylenol. If a person takes too much Tylenol, or if they take Tylenol and drink alcohol, they will have, or they can potentially have liver failure. Liver is an, or your liver is an organ that you need. These things, the medications aren't saying, no one prescribes medication to say, hey, he's coming into this office. Let's get him addicted and keep him coming back. I can guarantee you that if you never came back to visit the doctor, he's got hundreds and thousands of people lined up to come in. There is a shortage in health care. And if someone is given prescribed medication irresponsibly, then that person is just irresponsible. But that's not the goal. That wasn't the intent.
You're good at surface information.
Nobody applies a Band-Aid and thinks that it won't stop the bleeding.
Let me interject this thought, please. Can I interject this thought? Ma'am, we live in a capitalistic society. In a capitalistic society, it depends on what end of the spectrum you're on that determines how you see a thing. If you're in the business of making money, then you try to make money at all costs. You don't necessarily see all the effects of how you're trying to make this money. You're just trying to make money. If you're on the other end that you're working a job, you're trying to work a job and you want to get paid based upon working a job. So you have those that's actually running the business and those that are working the business. And from whichever perspective they own determines how they do, how they perceive a thing. And then you have those that are investors in the business who are neither managing the business nor working the business, but they're making money out of the business. The people that are making money out of the business, they're not concerned about what's taking place, the internal workings of the business. All it is the bottom line, what is my dividend check going to look like? And so you have managers who manage the facility, who manages businesses with the sheer intent of making profit for its investors. Their objective is not necessarily the best.
Let me take a quick break, and I got 12. I'll come back. Be like 10 more minutes. Let me give you time. I want the show to end with everybody talking. Give me 10 minutes. I'll be back in 3 minutes, you be on. 3 minutes, I'm having you come back in a minute, Mr. Little. 347-838-9825, Chicago, Cleveland, D.C., and Jimmy Lee. Be back in a minute.
Give me the
that we lost Cleveland. He don't like Inez Andrews. Go ahead, Mr. Little. Finish wrapping it up.
Okay.
10 minutes.
Okay. My point was to the young lady was this. That from a business perspective, depending on what point of view you're in that business paradigm, determines how you look at the situation. So here we were talking about psychotropic medication, which is pharmaceutical drugs. So you have a pharmaceutical industry that are in the business of making money to sell drugs to the masses of people. You have the investors, who are people who invest to gain profit from the drugs. Then you have those who manages the different pharmaceutical companies, who their job is to get a profit. They're not thinking about the vast amount of people it may be affecting. That's not what their job is. Their job is to get finances. But then you have those who use the drugs, who actually come to their doctors with the understanding that the doctor is supposed to be looking out for their best interest. But in actuality, it's not the doctor who's supposed to look out for their best interest. They are. Because the doctor oftentimes, I'm not saying all of them, but the doctor oftentimes are asked to prescribe certain medications because the pharmaceutical industry have a deal with a certain doctor's HMO or the insurance provider. And so as a result, that doctor is in the business of selling medications. And so they can sometimes become compromised. And as a result of that, they're in the business of selling drugs. I say this in all sincerity. The gentleman who filed this lawsuit against the Juvenile Detention Center in 1999 is currently on the advisory board for the mental health in our building, who are prescribing the drugs. Back in the day, in 1999, they used to come in with maybe a half of a grocery bag full of medication. Now they come in with three and four grocery bags of medication every day. And so I understand what the doctor was saying, that they are trying to prescribe the best medications for the patient. But at the same time, by the same token, the adult market for psychotropic medication has become saturated. One in every three adults takes some form of psychotropic medication. So since that market became saturated, they decided to start targeting children. I'm not going to say that they're just targeting black children. That's not what they're doing. They're just targeting children, period, to make money. This is an economic gain for the pharmaceutical industry. It just so happened that the Cook County Juvenile Detention Center is the largest one in the world. It's the largest detention center, and I can't emphasize this enough, in the world. And it was the birthplace for juvenile detention services. And so quite naturally, if it's the largest one in the world and you take it over and you strip the discipline and the children become out of control and then you start prescribing them psychotropic medication, it becomes a market that you can make a lot of money out of. So that same Isaac Ray Mental Health, in 2007 when they started, their first contract was for $9.2 million, and that was for 42 months. Now their current contract is for $16 million for the next 4 years. So the question becomes, what becomes their motivation? Is their motivation the best interest of the children, or is their motivation making money? I leave that for you all to determine. I'm concerned about the outcome. The outcomes are we have children dying every day in the city of Chicago at an epidemic and or pandemic rate. And as a result of that, I do know that what they have done to the Cook County Juvenile Detention Center
grossly mismanaging it, reducing the population at an alarming speed, and sending the children out worse than they came with these medicines in them and some of them without them. But they're creating sociopathic mentality because the children don't have any rules. So if they feel no rules when they come into the facility and they don't have any rules when they leave the facility and they let them leave just as quick as they come in, quite naturally they're going to become sociopathic and they're going to deal with every adult and every person in the community with contempt. And that's what we're dealing with, the sad reality. And that's what has created this. In every major city, we don't have killings with children the way we do in Chicago. The only variable that's different from every major city is not the project, is not the school system, is not bad parenting, is not even the gang structure. It's the Cook County Juvenile Detention Center, known as the Audie Home, that used to work in a very constructive, consistent, concise way to help our children become healthy, whole. That's why you never heard about a counselor ever getting killed in Chicago.
All right. I got about 3 more minutes left in the show. So I'm about to let you get your shots out like everybody do. Matter of fact, let me bring Dava Watson from War. And Dava, you got anything to say? Let's say anything.
Dava. Okay, that's Dava Watkins. Okay, Dana from D.C., if you want to say far, let my man, Mr. Little, end us out.
Well, I would like to thank him for enlightening, giving us all this enlightening information. And I appreciate the fact that he's stand up, you know, and doing the right thing, that you do have integrity. That's so important because so many people don't. And the examples that you've given us, sir, are just another example of poor leadership. And that is part of the problem. And unless we can get some responsible leaders in these positions, then guess what? We'll continue to have these problems. And so when I'm in Chicago on a Tuesday, I'm going to take you up on that offer. I'll get your information, and I'm going to come and shake your hand. And I will definitely read the book that you've recommended. I appreciate an awful knowledge that you can drop on us. Thank you,
Mr. Little,
for this opportunity.
Information at your book and all that. Where can they find that information at?
Well, the only thing that I can give you right now to be able to get in touch with me would be an email address. Would be untoldstory. U@yahoo.com. Untoldstory. U@yahoo.com. Untold story for you. That goes straight to my iPhone right now, but it will eventually on the 15th of October, it'll be going to a blog. Because I'm developing an entire blog that's going to have all this information in it.
All right.
Okay.
This is, I got you. This is Jimmy Underground Radio Network. Little, we have a man, Sean, checking in from D.C., War, Darva Watkins, Dana for D.C., Jimmy Underground Radio Network, everybody, good night. May God be with you. I got Charles Love on tomorrow and Why Blacks Should Be Republicans. Check us out. Thank you, everybody.
All right, great to see you.
No, I'm a man.